Is it a crisis? Hi, I'm Jarvis Smith, and my new show, Lean Into Clean, will inspire, impress, and inform. What can we all do to clean up our lives so the next generations and, of course, our beautiful planet can thrive? Perhaps we've all lost our way. Lean Into Clean will showcase how we might remember, refocus and restore the natural way so we can again live in balance and harmony with life on Earth and all its inhabitants. Good day to you. It's Jarvis Smith here from UK Health Radio, my show Lean Into Clean. How are you all today? I think we've got a bit of snow on the way, so that's going to be exciting, providing it doesn't take out any of our normal travel and communication systems, of course. But it's always good fun when it snows in the country. I'm up in North Yorkshire, so we've been kind of looking out the window going, oh, is it going to arrive soon? Anyway, how are you all? I hope you've had a lovely weekend. Thank you for joining me again today. Gosh, I would normally start with a bit of news, but today's guest I've found is going to be so interesting and inspiring. I want to try and use as much of the time as we've got. So we are going in and straight in. Today's guest is Muriel Louon. She studies the nature of reality and the universe to help us find our place in it. Now you can probably see why I think that news is not important. We all want to know how to find our place in the universe. So her unique approach is both metaphysical and mathematical, which I find super interesting. Now, Muriel is an expert at calculating geocosmic cycles to decode the invisible energy patterns that run our planet and our lives, so we can live in alignment with nature itself and our inner nature within ourselves. She's a subject matter expert in timing and invisible influence. We're going to get more into that, but it goes on to say a geocosmetic consultant and an executive coach. Now, I met Muriel quite recently, but we connected instantly and just found that we were talking on all kinds of perhaps spiritual and sustainable and supernatural and quite specific. Basically, we're all over the place in our conversation. Maria, welcome to our show, Lean Into Clean. Thank you for joining us.
Jarvis, thank you so much for having me a guest on today's show. And I'm thrilled to explore these concepts about the meaning of life and the meaning of our place in the universe together with you. Some of the biggest existential questions I think that every human has wondered, and certainly that civilization has wondered since the beginning of time.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And it's interesting because I keep getting this message in my head, kind of, you know, has she cracked the code? Like, has she cracked that most important question that kind of every single person, if not is asking all the time, which many of us are, certainly is asking at certain moments in time. But before we go into that, just tell us a little bit about yourself. So where are you in the world?
I am over in America, so across the pond from you, and I'm here in Houston, Texas.
Houston, Texas. Well, look, the first question I must ask you then, which is more of a personal one, what do you think about the latest election result?
Well, interestingly, I had done a podcast at the beginning of the year where I made some prognostications about the eventual results of the U.S. elections. And it turns out that my prognostications were 100% accurate. And I gave some evidence relative to geocosmic patterns and repeating cycles as to why the candidate that has won would eventually win. So in that regard, regardless of, you know, personal opinion, either way, I can certainly say that the method of geocosmic mathematics has proved once again to show us some really accurate patterns and prognostications about what is coming in our lives.
Oh, this is going to be juicy. Thank you for that. And I really appreciate the answer as well, because I know that, from talking to you and as kind of, speaking, I guess, on a more balanced conversation, you tend to live a life that is not swung by adversity or polarization. You seem to kind of live, right in the middle. And just evaluate everything that's happening in its kind of existence, rather than taking a position, which I love, and that's really important for us to get into this conversation. So thank you for being that person that stays balanced. I love that.
Well, the Buddhists say the middle path or the middle way, right, is the balanced approach to most things that we do.
It is, but the problem is most people get swung one way or the other, particularly when it comes to things like elections. When you choose one side or another, you're immediately in conflict with the opposition. And as we know, that is not the best way to be living, because then you're constantly in reaction rather than in a balanced perspective. So let's get into this. Just what do you want to start with first? Because I think, geocosmic is a word that probably not many of our listeners will necessarily fully understand. What does it mean to you?
Geo relates to the earth and cosmic relates to the universe. So geocosmic means the study of the interrelationship between the earth and the universe at large, particularly the relationship between the earth and the other planetary systems around us. And it's such an important area of study as we ask ourselves those really existential questions that we all wonder, which is, what is our place in the universe, and what's the meaning of life, and what's our role in this grand dance that appears to be happening around us?
Okay, nice. Okay, so what, from your perspective then, what can you tell us about the universe and our role in it from your studies and perspective?
Well, Jarvis, I'd like to start by posing a question that is simultaneously perhaps a bit of a hypothesis as well. And so it is. Could there be a hidden order to the universe that conventional science has completely overlooked? The more that science has studied things like the cosmos and consciousness, the cosmos being the great out there and consciousness being the great in here, the more we're realizing that there's actually a connection between the two. So, current evidence is suggesting five things. One, that the cosmos appears to be active and alive, and that it's both influencing our human consciousness, but that it's also responding to our human consciousness. The second thing is that Earth appears to be a focal point of cosmic evolution and evolving life within the universe. The third interesting thing is that time appears to be both quantitative and qualitative. And the next thing is then that time periods are informed by these different cosmic patterns that we're able to track mathematically. And the biggest thing that we're coming on to the precipice of understanding is that the cosmos itself appears to be informed by an even larger creative intelligence or participatory consciousness. Now, from a spiritual perspective, some might say that we're finding evidence that the cosmos is informed by what some would say is God, or as I like to say, G-O-D, a grand order designer.
Nice.
So it's interesting because considering this evidence, the idea of reconnecting humanity to the heavens is really the next frontier. As civilization is preparing to embrace things like the space age and artificial intelligence, we've got to re-enchant the cosmos in order to bridge what has felt like a deep dualism and divide between ourselves and the ineffable, and between our experience on Earth and the larger planets and cosmos around us. So, I really think that awakening our cosmological assumptions to a living universe that has creative intelligence and is in a reciprocal conversation with us and is guided by preeminent energetic forces is going to radically transform the way we see history, our individual lives, and certainly our place in the universe. And
Nice. Wow,
it's
wait.
really a shift of our cosmovision will move us away from mainstream materialism and back towards a worldview that returns the human soul to the cosmos.
Wow. So thank you for that. My interpretation of that is kind of Plato, Aristotle, you know, the golden mean, the point between two extremes. And when I try and explain that, I just say to people, look, you know, do you believe you're just simply a human being with kind of no beginning, no end? Or do you believe you're a spiritual being having a human existence? And are you able then to have one foot on each camp, i.e. the point between the two extremes, which is spiritual and physical, although we know it's not even physical anymore because it's just energy in its densest form or denser form. Would that be a kind of pretty fair analysis of what you're talking about from my own personal understanding?
Jarvis, you've explained it perfectly, and you've reiterated what most of our ancient philosophers have always encouraged us to consider, which is this blend between energy and matter, or spirit and the physical, rather than a dichotomy or divide between the two that can't be rectified.
Yeah.
You know, I think that, as you pointed out, finding the center point between the energetic and the material is really going to be the key to answering the most existential questions that
Yeah.
people have always wondered. You know, I'll tell you this, the most existential questions have always been around one thing, and that one thing is purpose. All humans have asked, you know, where do we come from? Why are we here? And what is the destiny of this life? But purpose is a really fascinating human question, because the question about purpose in many ways innately implies that we already sense there is one. You know, every inquiring human being since the dawn of civilization has instinctually asked those questions and therefore sensed that there must be some kind of order or plan of which we play our part. That's why we're always asking about it. And so if there is some kind of order or plan, then there must be a way to uncover it, interpret it, and track its unfoldment. And then also, if there is a plan, then that implies that there must be some kind of creator or intelligent designer of that plan.
I wrote a piece about this just the other day. It's in our latest issue of the My Green Pod magazine, the COP29 edition. If anybody wants to have a look at it, you can go to mygreenpod.com and just click on magazine and you'll see it. But the reason I'm bringing this to the question is, sorry, to the conversation is because I've been really feeling that there is an opportunity for us right now with these kind of existential threats that are on our doorstep, that are, you know, war, nuclear war, climate crisis. You know, if you speak to Trump, nuclear war is much more, you know, much scarier than the climate crisis. If you speak to somebody else, it's the climate crisis. So, you know, there's constantly these kind of things knocking at our consciousness going, yeah, don't fall back to sleep, guys. But my thing was this, and this is just kind of just to put this out there to you, is that I was really questioning the timeline that we're in and the cycles of time and the man-made time, and that maybe we've completely lost touch with our natural rhythm, maybe even the cosmic rhythm or the universal rhythm or the God force rhythm or whatever you want to call it. And we are all, many of us, many people, not all of us, are living literally out of sync, out of rhythm with the what perhaps the cosmic timeline. So talk to me a little bit about time and how you understand that from your perspective.
Well, what you say about time and timelines and natural orders and natural rhythms is really interesting, because as humans, we do experience a really unique cosmic ordering principle on planet Earth, and that is known as time. Our human experience of time is everything runs on a schedule, right? But where does time actually come from? So if time is a function of speed and movement, then whatever controls the movement of our lives and world also controls the direction that we're going and when we'll get there. In our universe, as we know it, the very planet that we live on is the biggest thing moving in our lives. And the Earth's movement is based around the movement of other planets in our solar system. So we're in this moving relationship with Earth itself, as well as the other planets. Basically, orbital rotation is what creates time. So studying orbital rotation then is going to help us learn how certain things happen when, right? What happened, what's coming next, and what it might be like. The moving cosmos is actually like a clock of evolution or a clock of energy and a rhythm of activity. So what's interesting is that the interrelated movement between Earth and the other planets and ourselves is what governs our perception of time. So when we can understand these moving relations of our solar system, we can actually understand the cyclical patterns of moving through our lives and what characteristics certain time periods hold. Now, here's the other interesting thing, which is that hypothetically, if the planets stopped moving, meaning they stopped orbiting and rotating, then the experience of time would stop, right? Time would stand still. Time only exists within the movement of the solar system and actually a conscious human subject to perceive it. So when we've heard things about the idea of timelessness or eternity, actually the idea of eternity possibly exists outside or beyond our solar system and our conscious awareness. So, you know, eternity might be the outermost container that holds our reality. And then our solar system and our zodiacal circle would be the container that holds planetary life. Our solar system and our zodiacal circle kind of demarcates the arena in which our particular solar system functions and the arenas of the geocosmic energies that are influencing our experience. So we could say that the constellations or the zodiacal system is literally our circle of life. It's our arena. It's our playground.
Love that. Love that. And talk to me a little bit about the architect that you feel is, you know, this God. You know, some might call it source, you know, others call it the field of consciousness. You know, others more religious might think of it as a deity or literally a godlike figure. But what's your perspective on the God?
Well, you know, the God, I think, shows itself in so many ways of intelligence. You know, I think wherever we see aliveness or intelligence, I think that's evidence of the God. Right. And as it relates to the cosmos itself and your question about time, it's really interesting because ancient scriptures written by the Jains, one of the world's oldest religions, they state that the celestial bodies generate time through their motion. And so it's interesting to say also that the Jains realized in their scriptures that time only exists in what we call specific space and the continents where people live, meaning that it's interesting, our concept of time is mostly a concept of perception that's based on orbital rotation rather than perhaps a fact of absolute reality. So it's interesting to look at what is designed within our playground of our solar system versus what might lie beyond the playground of our solar system.
Okay, no, it's lovely. I'll tell you what, we're going to cut to a commercial break because there's some really kind of basic questions I want to come back to you with. You know, where do we come from? Why are we all here? You know, what is the destiny of life? You know, that kind of stuff. I'm sure everybody's itching to know. So stay with us. We're going to cut to a commercial break. We'll come back to Muriel and we'll get into a deeper understanding of those answers to those questions. Back to you in a moment.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back. I'm Jarvis Smith. This is UK Health Radio. I'm here with Muriel Lauren. We're talking about life, purpose, our part in the universe. Muriel, let's get into some of these kind of very basic questions. You know, you talked about purpose. I love that. Purpose has become a bit of a buzzword over the last kind of decade. It's like, I, in my humble understanding of purpose, there is only really one purpose: for us to be living the best version of ourselves that's in service to the whole. You know, that, I mean, that's, I think, you know, it's about as complicated as it gets. But tell me, what does purpose mean to you?
Well, purpose is the seed of intention that I think gives us a raison d'être, or reason for living. And Jarvis, I agree with you that I think our ultimate purpose as a collective is to realize and remember perhaps our original nature, which might be one that is energetic and spiritual, or one could even say divine, and to do things that we're each uniquely talented at to help each other. And it's interesting because physics, particularly the recent work of the physicist Friedrich Capra, is elucidating that cosmic unity principle, right? We're being able to see that actually everything is connected. So we're all united in different ways through the experience of energy and consciousness, and that in that way, we are meant to be connected to each other. And it's kind of fascinating because I really think that a lot of our future depends upon bridging scientific innovation along with spiritual meaning. You know, I really think that the purpose of science and material progress should be about the upliftment of the human spirit, and not something that creates a separation from the human spirit or things that destroy the natural world in which we live.
Isn't it fair to say that there's a system that we're kind of born into that really, you know, if there are certain people that are running the world, which clearly there are, there's the leaders, there's the countries, there's the, you know, big decision makers, there's the institutional investment funds, you know, aren't they all getting us to be just kind of totally addicted to economics and taking us away from, you know, our true essence so that we can keep this narrative of money makes the world go round going on? I mean, that, so how do we how do we find our purpose, but in that system that is constantly fighting against us?
Yeah, I think that there are many systems in the world that are emphasizing and perhaps overemphasizing the material aspect of our nature. But I'm excited to say that I also believe there are other systems in the world that are remembering and emphasizing our energetic or spiritual aspect of our
yeah,
nature.
particularly now, right? There seems to be this kind of real awakening amongst many.
I agree. And the ironic patron of, I think, this remembrance of our energetic and spiritual nature might possibly be science. Because the interesting thing is that the further we've gotten into scientific discovery, the more we are having to confront our spirituality. You know, science has been entering the subtler realms of reality through things like quantum physics and consciousness studies. And so those have naturally been confronting us with conversations about God or the grand order designer and questions of the possibility of a soul or some kind of consciousness that goes beyond our physical self. And in that, it's been an intriguing blend of reconnecting, I think, modern science actually to many ancient spiritual traditions, because the funny paradox is that modern scientists are now discovering that what a lot of ancient spiritual traditions have been teaching is true.
So, yeah, there's a massive convergence between science and spirituality, isn't there, been over the last kind of decade, but even more so now.
Yeah, absolutely. And so rather than being opposed to each other, I think we're seeing that science and spirituality can be very natural cohabitants. And as we're continuing to press the frontiers of discovery, it's going to require a thinking in all of us that is both scientifically interested as well as perhaps spiritually knowledgeable. You know, these questions about what is real, you know, what's out there, what's our role in it, are coming up again as we're looking at things like outer space and artificial intelligence and psychedelics, which are all pushing our boundaries of beliefs. And so I think particularly too, a lot of modern science is realizing that some of the ancient sciences, or we could call them the esoteric sciences, eso meaning inner or non-physical sciences like yoga and meditation.
Is that what eso means, inner? I didn't know that.
Yeah, exo means external, right?
Yeah, yeah, makes sense.
Yeah. So those esoteric sciences are showing us how to sort of bridge both worlds between the energetic and the material. And so modern science is now recognizing a lot of the validity in these ancient esoteric sciences and the spiritual teachings that have always taught, you know, the mind is all and that reality is an illusion or Maya, and that we have to go within in order to figure out what's real.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think you've absolutely beautifully said that. I'm a big advocate right now that we as a species have become addicted to the outside world, and therefore we're living in an imbalanced existence, and we're caught up in this, dare I say it, the man-made conceptual world that has been created by man. Yes, there have been some women involved, but it's predominantly a patriarchal world that we've lived in. But there is an opportunity to break free from that, which is by the inner work, by the, you know, the sacred sciences and arts, the yogas and the meditations and the kriyas and the qigongs and the you know, all of that stuff. And then I think what happens is an absolute proof about that, that when you do internalize and begin to trust your inner wisdom, you become more in relationship and interrelated with the outside wisdom, and you're less controlled by the dynamics of, I don't know, the kind of out of kilter rhythm. I remember I had this experience once. I was it was in my very early days of practicing with my teacher, who's a yogi and a shaman who used sacred sound actually. And I remember walking down, coming out of the tube station at Oxford Street, and I came out, and there was just this rhythm of human beings, everybody moving in exactly the same time zone, like, you know, and I wasn't in that time zone at all. I was in a completely different matrix like time zone where all of these people were moving around me, and I was just walking and being at my rhythm, and it was completely different to nearly every other person on the street. And I was like, wow, I finally kind of disconnected from the matrix, and I'm back in my own flow. So thank you for reminding me of that. I've had a question in. It's not particularly relevant to what we're talking about now, but it's a question from Warren. Thank you for sending it in to us. He says, where do the different time schedules, time calendars originate? We've got our Western calendar, and then we've got the Muslim calendar. Now, funnily enough, I'm going to have a guest on in a few weeks that is going to be talking about the Mayan calendar. Geraldine, who's a real expert in the Mayan calendar, so we're going to talk about that. But do you feel like you'd like to respond to that question? Because it'd be quite nice for Warren, I think, just to hear your perspective.
Yeah. What I'll say is, you know, our different calendar systems originate from the points in the sky which we're measuring, and what different cultures have weighted as more important than others. So again, if time is a function of, we could say, planetary movement, then what most cultures have done is they've examined from their point of view which planetary movements they find most significant. Mm-hmm. And then they're calculating time based on those preferences.
Mm-hmm.
So over history, of course, how we are weighting which planetary movements appear to be more significant, and therefore how we've adjusted calculations of time, has shifted. And so it's really interesting also too to consider that it's kind of like realizing whoever holds the keys to understanding the movements of the planets seems to hold the keys to unlocking the secrets of time.
Yeah.
Something interesting is that Galileo, of course, the famous astronomer and mathematician and physicist, he told us that mathematics is the language in which God has written the universe. And what he means by that is that Galileo thought that the fundamental laws of the universe could be understood through math. And he thought that the universal language to describe the cosmos could be found in the mathematics of the cosmos. So this is where we get the origin of what has been called the mother of all sciences, which is geocosmic mathematics, or kind of in layman's terms, astrology. So geocosmic mathematics is actually the science of time because the zodiac is a clock, right? And so these celestial mathematicians are actually timekeepers, right? Which is why, of course, we go through archaeology and we see for thousands of years, since the beginning of history, we have all these maps of time and of the stars and of celestial movements. So this really helps to explain why basically every known culture around the world has had some form of celestial mathematics or astrology, where we see evidence of, early calendars and planetary ephemerides. Basically, our ancestors were time telling. Right? Archaeological evidence about celestial time telling emerges around the third millennium BC in Babylonia, which is, kind of modern day Iraq, with calendrical systems that were used to predict everything from seasonal shifts and other things, right? So, from that birthplace of humanity, the geocosmic mathematical calculations and the knowledge of them started to spread out from that central location as civilizations began to spread. So we see everything from like the Babylonians, the Egyptians, the Greeks, the Persians, the Indians, the Chinese, the Romans, and many others built upon the knowledge of these mathematical measurements and these sky maps and the observations that were noted by these changing alignments. But what's, seems to be ancient is actually still with us today. Clues about times telling still show up in the way that we call things, right? We've got 12 hours of day and 12 hours of night, because of course the rotation of the Earth and our experience of that aligns with the 12 constellations during the day and during the evening. We've got 7 days of the week. That's all named after the seven visible planets, right? The planetary names. We've got Saturn day, Sun day, Moon day, and so on.
I wonder if there was a new calendar, a new time schedule created, whether it would be more inclusive of, all the planets, right out to Pluto and possibly, is it Planet X? I can't remember whether the latest one that's come. But I wonder if we'd suddenly flip into a different. I tell you what's really interesting as well. Now I'm completely going off on a tangent now, but not many people know this, but the Earth has changed its axis over the last kind of 10 years or something. And so where was true north before, which was around Greenland, now true north is more based in Russia, and which means is that why we're seeing perhaps the northern lights in places like Scotland and North Yorkshire is because literally the axis of the planet has turned a little. Gosh, I mean, it's all absolutely fascinating stuff, but I do want to dig down. So the work that you do and you offer, for want of a better word, readings for people to be able to perhaps understand their cosmic timeline or the geocosmic timeline. And then why is that helpful? Why would that be useful to somebody?
Well, the question is, who really cares, right? Who cares about understanding the proverbial signs of the times? Two things is if you're a big picture thinker, let's say you're a global government leader or a scientific or technological innovator, a policymaker who's making decisions that have a long range time impact on the world. Then being able to future cast large scale time frames becomes incredibly important, right? So when we ask ourselves questions like what would be the biggest trends and changes in the next 50 years, 100 years, 200 years, or beyond, the utility of geocosmic mathematics becomes really evident, right? So what does someone's country or company or industry need to start doing now then to stay ahead of the curve or being on the leading edge of some of these changes and transformations of the next frontier? So geocosmic mathematics can really help us answer those questions by calculating what is yet to come. Now, on a more personal level, you know, an individual who might be trying to anticipate where their life is going next, the same mathematical method works, but, you know, on a smaller and more personalized time scale. You know, geocosmic mathematics has a strong relationship to the fields of psychology and sociology. Because, of course, if you're in the category of big picture thinkers and innovators, then things like sociology, which tracks group mechanics and collective changes in cultures over a large scale of time periods, we can see the connection and utility of the cosmic math. And then on a more individualized level, you know, if you're a person, the field of psychology really tracks our inner mechanics and our personal changes in individuals over smaller scale time periods. So the math can be relevant to supporting, I think, also two discoveries in both psychology and sociology.
Wow. I mean, this is absolutely fascinating. I love it. I know you and I could talk for weeks on this subject matter. Look, I'm going to ask you to play your first song, because otherwise we won't get your music out. Tell us what song you've chosen. We'll play it and then you can tell me why you chose it.
The first song is called Message from the Stars by Estes Tone.
Oh, lovely. I can't wait to hear this. Thank you. We'll be back in a sec.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Well, a beautiful song. Thank you for choosing that. Why did you choose that song?
Well, of course, the name of the song, Message from the Stars, is incredibly relevant to my work and our topic today, and I think perhaps too relevant to some of the bigger questions humanity has always wondered about the cosmos and our place in the universe. And a fun fact about that song is the particular artist received an inspired or channeled message before going on stage at the Envision Tour in Dublin. And so decided to display this message across the green screens and the big screens during the concert. And the message was this: can we humans remember the original dream for Earth and our participation in it? How interesting.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. That's a big question, because I think that's exactly it, is that, you know, whatever the design was, or maybe the controlling mechanism that keeps us addicted to the outside world, that of course we've all participated in. I'm not saying it's a conspiracy, it just is part of the plan. But, you know, if we can remember the simple truth, then we could probably get back to some kind of harmony, and even nirvana, dare I say it, or heaven on earth. But this is the time, isn't it? This is the grand awakening right now. And so, you know, let's talk about signs of the times. What are the signs of the times right now? What is it that you've seen? What's on the horizon? How far away are we from reaching this thing that we've called the golden age? You know, even Trump in one of his speeches kept talking about the golden age. And I was like, wow, you know, is this guy completely like an absolute wizard and completely tuned in? Or is he just so out of it that you know, the others, ancients, ancestors just speak through him? I don't know what the answer to that is, but it's pretty cool that he's been using that line.
Well, Jarvis, I think you're spot on in your observation that we appear to be in the middle of what feels like a great awakening, or perhaps we could also rephrase it in some ways as a great remembering. What I see based on the planetary patterns and the geocosmic mathematics is that there are a few foundational questions that humanity is going to be addressing in the immediate future. And the questions are this: we'll have to define what is God, what is human, what is consciousness, what is a soul, what is freedom, and what are innovation ethics? Now, why do I think that these are some of the most pressing questions for humanity on the frontiers of the future? It's because this year, 2024, begins with a powerful planetary shift that hasn't occurred in about 250 years. And this is the shift of the outer planet Pluto into the constellation of Aquarius for the next 20 years from around part of 2023, but really 2024 to 2044. And historically, Pluto has shown in its patterns to often be a symbol of death and rebirth, or one could say beginnings and endings, transformations, and movements through the alignment of Aquarius have historically sparked times of innovation, independence, and rebellion. So I think that this time period between 2024 and 2044 really kind of heralds the age of revolution. And I think it's going to urge our society to examine again our definitions of freedom and sovereignty and innovation. You know, the last time this Pluto alignment occurred, it brought a few important historical changes.
When was that? How long ago was that?
It was around the years of 1776. And so it brought the American Revolution, the French Revolution, and then, of course, the establishment of my homeland, the USA, as we call it, the land of the free. It's interesting. Right?
I am laughing because it's so polarized, your country right now. It's just
it is, right?
Insane.
It's funny, the expression, right? America's always been dubbed in global politics originally as the land of the free, and to know that it was founded during a planetary time period, Pluto and Aquarius, which again, showing historical patterns, is representative of both rebellion and independence and innovation. So there's definitely a cosmic irony in there, perhaps a secret message in there about why.
This is all a big cosmic joke. Once you start to really internalize and get in touch with your spiritual essence, life just becomes funnier and funnier, right?
Right? It's so true. I do think you asked earlier, you know, how do we see evidence of God or perhaps the cosmos in our lives? And I think that sometimes we see evidence of God in the cosmos in the ironies of our life and in the cosmic jokes, right? When things and coincidences and synchronicities seem almost too perfect to imagine that they were arbitrarily orchestrated.
Yeah, I agree. It's interesting because I'm really, really confidently saying about, you know, my area of expertise very much in the outside worlds lies in sustainability and, you know, and what we now know is the climate crisis. But actually, my area of real true expertise is my spiritual teachings, my mastership in, you know, in mysticism and shamanism and things like that. But what I keep pushing out into the sustainability community right now is that, you know, is this a crisis? Which I even say in my radio kind of tagline and promo for the show. And the reason I ask that question is because nature is very clearly telling me that this is not a crisis. She is simply conspiring with us, with the universe, with the cosmos, whatever you want to call it, in order to awaken us from the slumber of being unconscious to the awakening of being conscious. And therefore, we'll remember unity and we'll remember that we're not separate. And we're, you know, and then we can actually all roll our sleeves up and go, right, let's get out of the way. Let's just live love. Let's dance and have a party and have fun and go back to those days before religion and bureaucracy and, you know, and separation were became important and get back to the Aquarian feminine, you know, fluid, yogic, shamanic, pagan, druid, Buddhist, Taoist lifestyles, right, that we all have within us because we are that.
Well, crisis just means a threshold. And in many ways, a crisis is often an invitation and an initiation.
It's the only way we wake up, right? Look at how many people near their deathbeds have this kind of enlightening moment and then decide to live pivotally to how they've been living. This is the grand awakening, the second coming of the Christ consciousness.
It is. And so I think it's intriguing to look at our current situation from the point of view of both crisis and initiation or awakening.
Yeah.
When we look at this epoch, this time period between, 24 and 44, right? This shift of Pluto into Aquarius. We can choose the direction of perhaps crisis, or we can choose the direction of awakening or achievement. And so I do think that there's two potential pathways, right? One potential pathway, if we choose to pursue it as a crisis and looking at these themes of innovation and rebellion or revolution and science, I think that that pathway could lead us to become a destroyer society.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, these modern innovations in science and technology to essentially kill ourselves, right? To kill ourselves through the invention of things like toxic chemicals in our food, in our air, and our water. Through the invention of biological warfare with lab-created diseases and synthetical pharmaceuticals that have negative reactions for us. Through things like bombs that are so powerful, they can actually blow up our own atmosphere. Right? By taking things like artificial intelligence and replacing the human element in society. By doing things where we are restricting and controlling digital information networks so that people only have access to certain ideas, right? And doing things where we're tracking and tracing money or people, but disguising it as things like, oh, social conveniences, right? Where underneath, we were actually turning each individual into the idea of like an online number with an on and off button, right?
Yeah.
So I think if we choose the path of the crisis, then ultimately we could see ourselves as a destroyer society who creates the gods that killed themselves. But there's
and then the other path. Let's get the other path in because we're running out of time.
The other path, which is the one I think most of us are wanting to choose during this time period, is the opportunity to reawaken and become a Renaissance society, right? A Renaissance society that uses modern innovation in science and technology to create these never before seen inventions that improve the human condition, where we're encouraging education for the masses through things like digital networks and exploration beyond our borders into space to understand our place in the universe and spreading these ideas of individual importance and power and autonomy to places in the world where those ideas haven't really existed, right? Spreading that idea of autonomy and individual power to places where we still see things like suffering and slavery and second-class citizenship. So really there's an invitation for us to know ourselves as a Renaissance society that is creating an epicenter of enlightenment.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful. Well, look, we are running out of time. I do want to get your second song in. What I suggest we do is there anything that you know, you'd like to just kind of close with? And then we'll play your second song and that will be the end of the show. And we're going to have to love and leave you. But I definitely want to get you back on because what I'd like to do is just go much more deeply into this. So anything you'd like to kind of share as a final takeaway?
Well, I'd like us to consider remembering ourselves as a part of the universe rather than apart from the universe.
Yep. Love that. That's beautiful that we are all connected. Everything is interconnected. The science is now proving that we're made from stars and therefore, you know, we can't be separate from any of it. Thank you for that, Muriel. You've been an absolute delight. I am looking forward to hanging out with you in a couple of weeks as we're going to be at a retreat together, which is going to be amazing. Thank you for coming to that. Tell us your next song. We're going to play that out. And it's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much, Jarvis. And our final song for today is called The Return to Innocence by the composer Enigma.
Before we do that, because that is an amazing song, just tell us quickly how people can find you should they be interested in having their own charts read.
Well, if you're interested in discovering your purpose and your path in life, or if you're a big picture thinker who's dealing with government policy, in innovation, technology, and decisions, then I can be reached at my website, www.livesymbolic.com. That's LiveSymbolik.com. And on Instagram, at livesymbolic.
Live Symbolic. Lovely. Muriel, thank you so much. We're going to play out with this beautiful track by Enigma. Another absolute classic. I love this song. Thank you for bringing your music. Thank you for bringing your wisdom. Thank you for bringing your joy. And I look forward to speaking with you again very soon. That's it from us, Leaning to Clean, another end of the show. We'll see you next Monday. Thank you, guys.